And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Her test results came back negative for COVID-19, but because she was so sick and exhibited so many symptoms of the coronavirus, her doctors suspected that she had it. We've got a detailed look at this woman's journey to survive the novel virus. It is the focus of our conversation now. Elizabeth Edwards from Hyde Park is our guest, and she joins us live on the phone now. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Michael.
I also want to note to our listeners that we reached out to Elizabeth's doctors and the hospital where she was treated and the Cincinnati Health Department. Her doctors declined to participate in today's show, and as of noon, we're still waiting to hear back from the Cincinnati Health Department. We do welcome future conversations with all of those organizations as this continues. Elizabeth, let's just start with, how are you feeling right now?
I am feeling so much better. I'm on day 3 of feeling better, so this is day 12 since I started having symptoms of shortness of breath on Thursday, March 12th, and it's been quite a journey, but I feel so much better.
Talk a little bit about the symptoms that you did experience, how severe they were, and what raised your suspicion that you might have this virus.
Yeah, so my case is probably not unlike a lot of your listeners right now, in that I have a very global job. Here in Cincinnati, you've got Procter & Gamble, largest consumer products company in the world, P&G, largest retailer after Walmart. And so we have a lot of people that travel a lot, and I'm one of them. I'm a venture capital investor. We invest all over North America in consumer brands, and we raise money from investors that are all over the world. So I had been spending the last 5 weeks at different global conferences domestically here in L.A., D.C., and New York with Asian and European investors. So I already knew that I was at risk. Back in February, I got the flu. So I always get my flu shot. But then after my L.A. trip, February 9th, I got the flu February 12th on my way home. And so was tested positive for flu B, was treated with Tamiflu. And then actually, over the course of the next several weeks, during my travels to D.C. And then New York, March 2nd through 4th, started to get what I thought was a sinus infection left over from the flu. So I was having hot flash-like fevers. And I still had this, just kind of gook, runny nose left over. So called my doctor and said, hey, I think I've got a sinus infection. Can you treat me for that? And so she put me on Augmentin. So because of those two factors, two of the things that when you exhibit some of these symptoms, they're wondering, ooh, do you have the flu potentially? Do you have pneumonia potentially? So immediately when I had my first symptom of shortness of breath on Thursday, March 12th, which was a brand new symptom, I have never had shortness of breath in my life, not during, a 3-day natural childbirth with my first child, not during the Cincinnati Flying Pig half marathon. I'd never felt what I felt on Thursday, March 12th, which was sort of like an asthma attack that never ended. I was walking a half block and really winded. And so immediately called my doctor because I had one cough and I had shortness of breath. And I said, I know what this is. I need to call her now. And spoke with her and she said, based on what we know, you already had the flu. Based on your travel and who you've been hanging out with over the last 5 weeks, and also the fact that you are right now on Augmentin, so I can effectively rule out pneumonia here. You have coronavirus, and you need to stay home consider yourself quarantined.
Elizabeth, let me just pause you there because we're definitely going to continue down this path with you. But I'm curious about, we're all hearing about this and we are seeing that people are improving from it. And it's mostly fine for those of us, 80% of us who get it, will probably recover from it. But what was your feeling when they said you probably have coronavirus?
I was really worried because, like all of us, I didn't know very much about what to expect. You know, when I was pregnant, my favorite book was What to Expect When You're Expecting. There wasn't anything out there like that. I was searching for symptoms. I'm a healthy 38-year-old woman and with no medical issues, no risk factors. And so, you know, I'd been reading and hearing on the news that, you know, young people aren't so affected. You know, millennials, of which I'm one, aren't so affected. And so, you know, on the one hand, I was very worried. But then on the other hand, I didn't take it seriously enough, turned out. So during the entire time that I was, you know, traveling, it was, you know, life, you know, like normal for me. I was working very late hours with some hard deadlines at work, you know, the week before of March 2nd. And so up very late hours, I had just battled the flu. My immune system was already down. And, you know, I'm drinking wine and staying up late and also taking ibuprofen for what I thought were, you know, just fevers from what I thought was a sinus infection. Turns out alcohol and ibuprofen are not great when battling this disease. And also rest and fluids are the primary ways to fight it. So my symptoms, I think, really progressed based on my, you know, generally poor wellness habits over the previous 2 weeks while my body was incubating the virus. So when it hit me on March 12th, I had shortness of breath, but, you know, stupidly did not really slow down my activity because then, you know, suddenly we're quarantined. So now I have we have a family of five. I have two little kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old and a 17-year-old stepson. And I was pretty much, you know, doing dual duty of watching the kids, running around, and also trying to, you know, have my normal conference calls. That all kind of culminated in, you know, March 18th, you know, Wednesday, I ended up putting myself in the hospital because I just wasn't taking it easy enough. I wasn't resting and giving my body a chance to really fight the virus properly.
When did you first get a coronavirus test, though?
Yeah, so, you know, keep in mind, this is almost, you know, 2 weeks ago. It was very early on, and nothing was shut down yet, not even the schools. So when I called my doctor on March 12th, you know, my doctor's office, like a lot of primary care physicians, is just getting the instructions of how they're going to handle this stuff. So when I hung up with my doctor, she said, rest, don't go anywhere, you're quarantined, and that was it. And she said, we're not going to test you because we literally don't have enough tests right now. So we need to save the tests that we have for critically ill and high-risk patients, of which you are not. Take it easy. You'll probably be fine. And, you know, keep me posted. But no further instructions. You know, no follow-up that I would be tested because, as she explained, there are very few tests. What I later learned is, you know, when I called on March 12th, you know, Thursday afternoon, in the city of Cincinnati, physically, they only had 60 tests. And so, of course, using one on a healthy 38-year-old woman is not a good use of a test. Now, what changed that was I started to get really concerned because here I have, you know, I have kids that go to school. Thankfully, my 4-year-old had not been to her school in over a week because she was home with an ear infection and fevers. And then my 17-year-old stepson attends an area high school here, and there are thousands of kids there. And so I thought, well, wait a second. I can't send him to school. And what if he's already infected some of his friends? What if they're asymptomatic? And so I ended up calling a dear friend who is a retired superintendent of his school system and said, hey, sorry to bother you at 10 o'clock on Thursday, but we've got a problem. You know, I'm really concerned. And within 5 minutes, his school was closed, and the robocall went out, and it was on the news. It's closed until, you know, they get a handle on my test. And then I got a call from the epidemiologist of the Cincinnati Health Department, and who went through my same symptoms, travel history, medical history, and said, okay, actually, we do want to test you. We want you to come in to one of our clinics Friday, and we'll call you at the time.
What day was that in this process?
So that was the next day, Friday the 13th at 3:30. I, along with, 50 other people sitting in our cars in a parking lot at the, one of the Cincinnati Health Department locations, they had just set up the location that day. And they're going about this in a very measured way. So for those of us that were, tested very, very early on, the drive-through test centers are not set up yet at that point. And so they had just set up a separate door, separate room, even separate staff for testing, and had us all sit in our cars until they called us on our cell phones, called us in one by one. They had, three nurses in there completely suited up head to toe with protective gear. And there are obviously a lot of people in that parking lot, waiting for their turn. What I later learned was they didn't test all of us because, again, they only had 60 tests used. And so 11 of those tests were used that day. One of them was mine. And it wouldn't be, unfortunately, until Thursday, March 19th, almost a week later at 6 a.m., that six of us would get the results of that test. So a long time to wait. And the health department really counseled me, said, look, we're still learning a lot from this. And you're probably not wise to post anything. We'll get your results back on Monday. And I think, they were worried that there might be some, public backlash against me personally for, getting the virus. We really stayed home and just immediately, Friday morning, I contacted first thing in the morning every single person that I had come into contact with over the past 2 weeks. And it's over 20 households affected and said, hey, it looks like I have COVID. They're testing you this afternoon, but until we know, you need to just stay in place, assume that you potentially have it, could be spreading it, and I will be in touch. And so the health department really thought that they would get these results back Monday the 16th. So they sent them to a lab in North Carolina, LabCorp. And so we're waiting. And over the course of that weekend, the 14th, this is the weekend before the election, before St. Patrick's Day, I started to feel very nervous because here I have at least let, the schools are closed. All the people that I had physically met with over the past 2 weeks are staying in place and keeping us posted on their symptoms. But it looks like everything else is going on. The world is going on like normal. And they kept reporting that in Hamilton County, there are zero confirmed cases.
And all this time, you've got doctors telling you that you have coronavirus. And this is just 10 days ago?
Yeah, this is 10 days ago. And so I have doctors telling me that I have it multiple, right, to my primary care physician, the epidemiologist at the health department, the actual nurses at the health department. and so over the weekend, I started to really get alarmed. I think as a citizen, a lot of us are really wondering, gee whiz, I have a friend and or two friends or three friends who have symptoms, but they're only reporting zero cases or one case. Why is that? What's going on? And I was definitely in that camp because I had in my household over the weekend as my 4 and 1 year old consistently had fevers of 100. As my stepson even had a fever of 101. I'm thinking, wait a second. I have 5 people in my house, and at least 4 of them have symptoms right now. But in Hamilton County, there are 0 confirmed cases. How can that be? And the answer to that question is, back when the CDC decided, you know, how are we going to test? How are we going to report out? In all of these countries, in fact, it's important to know that the number of confirmed cases is equal to the number of positive tests. And in a perfect world, if you have all the tests that you need and those tests are highly accurate and timely, that's a great model to go off of because it's hard data. It's real prevalence. The issue is that I think we made that decision potentially as a locale, as a state, as a country, not knowing that we would not have access to tests or reagents or lab capacity to get those tests run before those samples became non-viable.
And let me just remind our listeners that we are talking with Elizabeth Edwards. She's a resident of Hyde Park who was diagnosed by her doctors as having coronavirus. She's walking us through this timeline of events that leads up to where we are now, starting with her extensive work travel as early as February, where she had been traveling across the country and internationally and started to feel sick earlier in March and ultimately was told by her doctors that she probably has coronavirus and was finally tested for it. And we're going to get to the part where you get your results coming up. But we're just 10 days ago at this point in our conversation, Elizabeth, March 13. And I understand where you started to feel very concerned because your doctors are telling you what they're telling you. You've got young kids in your house as well. And you were just talking about the capacity for testing issue. And I think we've got some sound from Amy Acton, who has become very well known in Ohio for her participation in Governor DeWine's daily press briefings about coronavirus. And let's hear Amy Acton now.
Our reality is that we have limited resources, we have limited PPE, and we will never know just through our cases that we have so far. We know we have widespread community transmission, and we have to assume, remember, our initial date of onset of symptoms of one of our known cases was February 7th. So we all have to assume that it is amongst us, it probably has been here, and if we decide to allocate resources just based on number of cases, we'll be missing the mark. Because in Ohio, we will not know those numbers. We may never know fully who all was exposed during this time. And right now, we are gonna limit our resources and our testing to those who are hospitalized and our healthcare workers. You already know through the news that we have a shortage of swabs, and even though we ramped up our testing capability, we have extraordinary, you know, we have the Cleveland Clinic, which is an international, some of the best hospitals in the world in Ohio. And they have done that. They ramped up their ability to test, but we have a shortage of these things. And so with them and with our other hospitals, we're talking about limiting our testing to those that are hospitalized and most sick and most at risk. For those of you at home, I know that us talking about taking this issue of testing in some ways off the table for most of us, the 80% of us who will stay home is a very scary thought. But I can tell you this, even if you get tested, even if I were tested today and was negative, it does not mean I do not have the disease right now. It might just be too early in the disease process. I don't yet have the viral loads.
And that was Amy Acton, the Ohio Public Health Director, talking in one of the daily press briefings that become part of our daily lives here with Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. We are talking to Hyde Park resident Elizabeth Edwards, who is recovering from coronavirus. We're going through this long timeline of events that she experienced. Elizabeth, I know that as your concerns started to raise about the situation you were facing, you actually started to see what ultimately did happen. You reached out to the Secretary of State's office and politicians about a need to cancel the election.
Yeah, I did. And I have to just say how lucky we are in Ohio right now to have Dr. Acton leading this charge, because everything that she said is exactly what I experienced, you know, firsthand. And I've had numerous people from Hamilton County and beyond really point to the same exact thing. Hey, I have all the symptoms. I called my doctor and they said they're not going to test me. And how horrifying that feels as an individual, because you know that your number is not counted. And so you're sitting there with your own symptoms, and you also know that the numbers are wrong. And so the feeling as a citizen, for me, I was just overcome with a sense of urgency. You know, the insula part of my brain, the risk-assessing part of my brain is going, act now, act now. You have to highlight this. So I ended up actually, you know, finally posting on Facebook, you know, to my friends and family, and reaching out to Secretary of State Frank LaRose, the heads of the Democratic and Republican parties here and also at the state level, and Lieutenant Governor Husted. And I just felt like, you know, I really hope that you all have all the information that you need in order to make this decision. But sitting here today, there are zero reported cases in Hamilton County, and I have at least four, if not five, in my household. So something's off. And we really need to act, because if you go forward with this election, where people like my mother-in-law, who's in her mid-70s and has lots of risk factors and has never missed an election, she's exactly the person who needs to stay home. But she's going to go out and vote. She's going to touch all of those surfaces, use all of those pens, and breathe all of that air, and be in, you know, close contact with people that, who knows, you know, 25 to 50% of us could be walking around right now asymptomatic and will never, you know, if you are healthy and rest and drink fluids, don't do what I did, right? If you stay healthy, you may never really feel the effects at all. And your body's just going to fight it off naturally. Some of us might feel, you know, very, very little symptoms. And so they canceled it, you know, over the weekend, and then some judge, tried to block that. So I found myself up, you know, very late nights over that weekend and Monday, really working to ensure that at least I got the word to all of our leaders of what I was experiencing, because I felt it was very important at that point to cancel our or postpone our election, which we did. But then if you look at Florida, Illinois, and Arizona, for instance, they went forward. And honestly, now looking at the real-time health data, and anyone can do this if you want to go to healthweather.us. Healthweather.us is real-time health data from around the country. So there are a lot of people that use a digital thermometer called Kinsa. It's widely available. A lot of people use it. It's connected to the cloud. So it's a digital thermometer. When you take your temperature, whatever that temperature is recorded for you, but it's also recorded for public health. And right now, the state of Florida is 3% over the trend line for normal flu symptoms, way more than New York, California, or any of the other hot spots that they've identified.
And we should note that Florida in particular has also had a lot of activity on their beaches and such during the spring break season as well, that has received a lot of criticism on social media. Again, this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm speaking with Hyde Park resident Elizabeth Edwards, whose doctors told her she had coronavirus. We're going through the timeline of events where she talked to health professionals and politicians about the dangers that lie ahead, but we still haven't gotten to the part where you got your coronavirus test results. We're going to take a very short break. We'll come back and talk about that. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our guest by phone is Elizabeth Edwards. She's a Hyde Park resident recovering from coronavirus. Elizabeth has been kind enough to walk us through this extensive timeline of work travel, both domestic and international, throughout February. She started to feel ill in early March, contacted her doctor on March 12th to talk about some additional symptoms, and that doctor said that Elizabeth had all the signs of COVID-19 and to stay home. She ultimately decided on her own to notify those that she came in contact with, saying that she lives in a narrow physical area and mostly did conference work with people and would limit community spread, she suspected, but did also contact her kids' schools and made a lot of steps after hearing this from the doctor. However, we haven't gotten to the part in the timeline where you got those test results. And you tell us again what day this month you were first tested.
Yeah, so I was tested Friday, March 13th at 3:30. And the health department really thought that they would have the test results back by Monday, the 16th. Of course, the election was supposed to be on the 17th. Now, then we were really in a waiting game because even the health department, when they sent those that test off to LabCorp, when they sent those 11 tests, they really thought that they would, get 11 back in three days. But they didn't end up coming back until Thursday, March 19th at 6 a.m. So
6 days.
A week. Yeah, exactly.
And those results said what?
And those results said that I was negative, which when I called my doctor and even, the health department called and said, this is a real stumper because we really think that you have it. And in fact, the day before, so Wednesday, March 18th, because of my own, I will just be frank, stupid choices, I ended up in the hospital on Wednesday, March 18th at about 11 p.m. because I had run out of air. My shortness of breath kept progressing because I wasn't resting enough. This is unlike anything that I've ever had, and I know that, listeners at home are going to think, what is it like? What is it like to have coronavirus? Unlike the flu, which kind of hits you like a truck. And I know I had it 5 weeks ago. Hits you like a truck all at once, very high fevers, body aches, chills. You feel like you're dying, like you just have to stay in bed day one. And it takes several days of that to really recover. And that is an upper respiratory virus. This is different. This comes on very slowly over time, at least it did for me, and that's what they've said, and builds over time. So I started having that shortness of breath symptom on Thursday, March 12th in the afternoon, and definitely, my worst days, were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so kind of days 5 through 7 were my worst days. Peaking at day 7, Wednesday, March 18th, when because I wasn't resting and drinking fluids and just really chilling out, I was using too much air, walking around my own house, cleaning up after the kids, getting on conference calls. And so it just built up to the point where I couldn't breathe.
You should have just stayed in bed?
I should have just stayed in bed. If I had stayed in bed, first and foremost, I never would have ended up in the hospital. Needlessly taxing our healthcare system, needlessly taking up a spot that, thank goodness when I went, it wasn't a busy day in the hospital. That's going to change over the next several days. They need every bed for people that, older folks, for people with risk factors, and I am not one of those people. So I should have. When my doctor said rest, she really meant was sit in bed, read a book, or sleep. That's it. That is resting.
You also recommend that folks get this pulse monitor?
Yes. So the thing that ended up really helping me, so here I'm not listening to my body, end up in the hospital at 11 o'clock on Wednesday night. And the ER physician, so you should know, if, God forbid, you do everything right and you still end up in the hospital with respiratory distress, now at these hospitals, there are separate entrances for respiratory distress. So you see the regular ER entrance, so broken bones, cuts, they're going in the door on the left and respiratory distress. You can't breathe. You're going in the door on the right in a tent. In the case of my hospital here in Cincinnati, and so I went in. So other thing to note, because it's potential COVID, your loved ones cannot come with you. So unlike your broken bone or cut, where they can sit in the waiting room with you and even, you know, visit you while you're in the hospital, that is not the case with suspected COVID, because they can't have people who either may or may not be infected milling around in the triage room and in this very secure separate floor that they have set up for COVID. So okay. I go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, before we get into more of retrospect and maybe what you would do differently, what your advice is for the rest of the community who may end up dealing with this illness, I just want to reiterate that your doctors told you that you have coronavirus. Mm-hmm. You took a test. It came back 6 days later as negative. Are you currently reflected in the numbers from Hamilton County of confirmed cases of coronavirus?
So it's interesting. In my own chart, in my own, you know, my chart with my doctor and the way that my doctor is treating me, it's positive COVID. But I am not in the numbers counted for Hamilton County. And this is important for people to know, because I know that there are a lot of folks out there going, there's something wrong with these numbers, there's something wrong with these numbers. There are two different methodologies that they can select. One is we are going to say that the number of confirmed cases equals the number of positive tests, or we could say the number of confirmed cases is the numbers that doctors, like primary care physicians, ER physicians, et cetera, are reporting to us. They selected the former. They selected the first one, where the number of confirmed cases is equal to the number of positive tests. And so that does, you know, in the short term, it both underrepresents the numbers, because, I'll give you an analogy. If you have 300 million people in the U.S., and let's say, just humor me for a second, 150 million are infected right now, but you only have in your country 10 test kits to give out. What is the maximum number of confirmed cases you can have with that model?
10.
Right. And that's assuming that the test is 100% accurate and that you're testing, you know, the right, you know, 150 million. So what we know now is, look, you know, we didn't have enough tests. We still don't have enough tests. However, we're taking all of the, with an abundance of caution, we're taking all of the steps as if we, and we know the numbers of cases are much higher than the number of quote unquote confirmed cases.
Okay. I want to ask you about your case and how folks in your own house, your kids, how did they end up faring with this?
Yeah. So my, my own case, tested finally, you know, they, the test result that came out was negative, variety of different reasons. One, I was tested too early in the disease. So my viral load, there wasn't enough virus in my system to make its way up to my nasal passages where they swabbed, which is what Dr. Atkin kind of referred to, in her press conference, which is why the test is only 80% accurate. In my household, so my particular symptoms, if I had just rested, I would be short of breath, which is fine. I ended up with much more respiratory distress, feeling like I couldn't breathe. I was lightheaded and going to pass out and not going to wake up. That's what put me in the hospital. Immediately when I got to the hospital, they put a pulse oximeter on my finger. And in a mask. And those two things gave me so much comfort, because I looked down at that pulse oximeter, which measures two things. It measures the saturation of oxygen in your blood. And for a healthy individual, that number should be between 95 and 100. When I presented at the hospital, I was 99. So even though I'm gasping for breath, feeling like I'm going to pass out and never wake up, they put that pulse oximeter on me, and I'm 99. Now, my heart rate, my normal heart resting heart rate is about 60. In this case, it was 120. So my heart's working really, really hard, almost like I'm running a marathon. And since then, because in our neighborhoods, and in fact on your Apple iWatch and on your Samsung, and I think even maybe on the iPhone, you have pulse oximeters, this very simple measurement tool available to you. And so I borrowed a pulse oximeter from my neighbor when I came home, because as I was going through that really the roughest part of the disease, which is just feeling like you can't breathe and feeling like you're short of breath for such a prolonged period of time, like days, when I'm resting, I'm looking at that pulse oximeter just as long as my oxygen saturation is between 95 and 100, I'm good. I'm going to be okay.
And Elizabeth, let me ask you, because we've just got about a minute left. I know that you found that you could treat yourself a little bit better, not just by cutting out the wine and maybe switching from ibuprofen, mm-hmm. but staying hydrated. You switched to Tylenol, acetaminophen, and you slept more and you rested mm-hmm. more. You found that that was an effective treatment for your symptoms.
Exactly.
How quickly did you start to see improvement?
Yeah. So from the peak, you know, days 5 through 7, they say from first shortness of breath are the worst. I would agree. And then it's been, you know, kind of a almost like a bell curve where the peak at the top. I'm on day 3 of feeling better, and you can tell I'm having a normal conversation with you without having to gasp for breath.
And your kids are okay?
My kids have been fine the entire time. You know, I think that's really important for parents to know. Your kids, unless they have risk factors, are really going to be fine. Mine are running around like nothing's going on with 100-degree fevers, no change.
Well, we're glad to hear that, and we so appreciate the amount of time that you spent with us, and hope to talk again when things are clearer for everyone. I think our audience is appreciative of you sharing so much about your experience. We've been talking with Elizabeth Edwards, a Hyde Park resident. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. We want to hear from you. Maybe some ideas about coronavirus, COVID-19, the response, some subject matter that we haven't covered yet, that we should cover, that we've either overlooked or not thought about. So email us at talk@wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.